45 minutes into this, and so hopefully they can get that pulled up. But if not, we've got pictures on here. So hopefully you grabbed a packet. I got a copy back there. If you didn't grab the packets on that chair as you come in. Just a little bit about myself. My name is Steve Dewey. I'm a special education teacher. I'm on my 36th year of teaching kids with behavior disabilities, emotional disabilities. I started off at Primary Children's Residential Treatment Center in Utah, working with some of the hardest kids on the planet. And it was there that I learned and got everything I could from them on how to do the things that I do and how to stay strong in this. And I'm just like the Energizer Bunny. I just keep going and going, and I love working with those kids. Those kids are my hero, because those are kids, like, I was such a mama's boy growing up, and it took me a divorce to finally get out of that problem, but I love that I learned from that. We talk about how we learn from mistakes, but after being an Idaho boy and after being there for 11 years in Utah, couldn't stand it anymore, so convinced my wife to come back here to my roots and we've been happy ever since. So I work at Sand Creek Middle School right now. I work in a classroom. It's called Applied Social Skills. And the kids that are in there, when they called me over to teach there, I was asking lots of questions. And they said, you'd be working with kids that are frequent flyers into the office for disciplinary problems. And I had worked with that principal before that was there. And he said, Steve, you make my job so much easier. He didn't have to deal with discipline anymore. So all those kids are in my classroom through five periods throughout the day, and we divide them up, and usually there's about 5 to 8 kids in each class, and we can talk, and we help them to self-regulate. It's the main goal. We help them to recognize their emotions. But first of all, we talk about how to recognize your thoughts. And you can focus and be mindful of your thoughts, and then it controls what you say. And then it comes down to our feelings, and then it goes out to what we do. So it just makes sense that if we can control what we're thinking, and that's what we teach those kids over and over, is to help them to be mindful of their thoughts. And there's no such thing as, there's bad thoughts, but that doesn't mean you're a bad person. And so we help them to understand that. So if you look at that that middle picture there, that is my middle son, and he is the classic middle son. There he is, just a little tyke. I wish I could show you on the screen on this next one, but my Jackson, when he was born into the world, I knew that I was going to be in trouble. And I asked God at that time, could I be exempt from having a special needs kid? He has learning disabilities. He's bipolar, and he's probably the hardest student son that I've ever had to deal with in my 36 years. And I am so grateful that I have my Jackson, because he's taught me better than any seminar, any book, any journal. But we made some mistakes along the way. But as we did the things that I'm going to teach you. If you look at that bottom success story, and I wish you could see those pictures, but he's my fishing buddy. He got married 2 years ago to the love of his life, and she is a social worker. I mean, who better to marry your son who has those kinds of disabilities and can understand a kid who's bipolar than somebody who's a social worker? And she loves him, and they just announced a couple months ago a few months ago, they're pregnant with our first little grandson. I've got 3 granddaughters, and now he's going to have my first grandson. But he's an electrician, and he loves what he does. And if you can see that bottom right picture on that first page, that's him flexing his muscles, proud of himself. On the bottom left picture on that first page, that's his new Chevy Silverado. Drives a nicer truck than I do. He's successful. And not because he can buy a Chevy Silverado, but because he loves who he is. And he has been through so much crap in his life. He's been through a divorce. I mean, out of all 3 of my kids, I'm thinking, oh, why is Jackson the one that's going to get a divorce out of my 3 boys? But yet he handles it better than anybody else. Handles it better than I did when I went through a divorce eons ago. He can handle any problem. This kid can fix any problem. This kid doesn't ever stop. He will never give up on a problem. If he was doing electrical work for you, and there was something that couldn't be solved by any other electrician, he'd figure out how to do it. And he wouldn't stop until he did. And there's so many things I want to tell you about him. I'm sad about the TV, though, but I'm glad that we at least have this. If you were in my other class, I'm going to talk about some of the, I'm going to talk about some of the introductions to love and logic. So there's, on that next page, we're going to talk about the three E's of love and logic real quickly. And that's experiences, examples, and empathy. The thing with experiences is kind of what I've already said. You want your kids to have had thousands and thousands of real-world learning opportunities while they're under your roof, while they're with you, while they're living with you. You want them to get ready for the real world. You want them to walk out of your house for the last time, well, you hope not the last time, but when they're on their own, and they look at the world and everything that they're doing and their job and their problems, and they go, I recognize this world with all of its issues, all of its problems, because we practiced it at home every day. Does that make sense? So that's the basic theory of that. And so think about, as you hear me today, think about what you can do, all the things you can do, especially if you have a special needs child or just a child that doesn't have those special needs, but we all have special needs, right? We all have disabilities, okay? Some we wear pretty clearly, others you don't know about. And so we talk about how, you know, as we get examples on that next E, how we get examples of how we deal with our disabilities, how we deal with our setbacks, how we deal with the problems we have in our life. And we do it in a good way. You know, we're going to model that we try not to swear, or we model how to treat other people, and that's nice. That's really important. But I'm talking about modeling the big problems in our life. You know, when you find out you're not going to get a tax refund because your wife didn't fill out the W-2 form right, or something like that, now you're going to be paying $3,000 instead. You know, how are you going to handle that? Can you model that? I mean, it's like, holy cow, are you serious? We're paying, we don't have $3,000. How are we going to handle that?
Yes. I think that it might be on. I don't know.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I'll move it around. Nope. Darn it. Shoot. I was wishing it was a touch screen. So. And then the last one is empathy. How to have empathy for people with what they're going through. How many, by just kind of show of hands, how many have kids with learning disabilities, or you work with kids with a learning disability, or a behavioral disability, or things like that? Okay, good. And if you don't,
that's fine. Right,
like I said, we all have disabilities, and our kids definitely have disabilities. And so empathy is about putting our feelings aside. And if you've been in the McKees class, they talked about how to do that, how to not think about what we want to say and what we want them to learn. We have to let them talk and get it out first. Oh, look at that. Now, what do I do to get that? Do I just go to... Oh, I think, right?
Yes.
Yay. So, yeah, there's cute little Jackson. And, you know, that was right before we knew all hell was about to break loose in his life. And, yeah, there you can see Jackson. You know, I thought that was a pretty cool picture. You can tell I'm proud of this kid. Here he is doing the Titanic thing on the front of the Titanic. So, but again, he's my fishing buddy, and we are tight. I love that kid. I love my other sons, my other two boys, but no one treats my wife like my son Jackson does. And we'll talk about that in a bit. His ability to read other people is an amazing strength. And he wouldn't be able to do that if he wouldn't have gone through all the hardships that he's gone through. So, going back a little bit. Yeah, we talked about that. Let's see, we're right here. So what are we going to do? We're gonna let kids make mistakes. And it's definitely not a setback. The world would teach you it's a setback when your kids make mistakes. But we need to model and be the example that mistakes are a good thing, right? That thank you. You know, that's a good thing that you made a mistake. Because you're going to learn from that mistake. So make sure that you're giving that example of, how cool is that, that you screwed up? That's different than what you hear about the world. You know, we definitely don't want to shame our kids for making a mistake. Again, after teaching for 35 and a half years, one of the biggest problems that I've never had this problem in the first 20, 25 years of my career, that when kids screw up now, they go off the deep end. And I blame that on social media, that, you know, nobody posts things about their mistakes on social media. It's all perfect. And they think that they're broken if they make a mistake. So our job is to model what happens when we make a mistake. We don't say things like, oh, I'm so stupid. I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I did that. We need to start retraining our brain, burn neural pathways of how to respond. Visualize that, practice that on how you're going to talk when you screw up. And then talk to your kids. Have them catch you. I give my students and my boys, I gave them full permission that when I screwed up in my verbiage, that they got, oh, Dad, did you hear what you just said? Thank you. Thank you. And then, you know, because I do the same with them, that no, you're not broken. It's okay that you made a mistake. This is a good thing. Okay? So yeah, that's the fix. We need to model that and make sure that our reactions to our children's mistakes are good. The other thing I would say is please, that's a whole nother class, but limit their screen time by making sure that anything that gets the internet is out of the basement in the dark and up where you are. When we're raising our boys, our home computer was in the living room. One of the best gifts my wife ever gave me was this big hutch where we could put the computer in because it fit her decor. Mm-hmm. You know, the hutch. And boy, if you were done with the computer, she'd love to shut that so that it looked good and matched all the decor. And I was like, that's great. But if our kids were working on homework assignments and stuff like that, it was where everybody was. And now parenting is done with, you know, putting their game system in the basement and just, because they're out of our hair, right? You know how many parents do that? They just give their kids the new iPhone, and if I don't have to see you, then there's no problems. Yet we've got tons of problems in the world because kids have low self-esteem, they have anxiety issues because they don't know how to deal with relationships, they don't know how to deal with problems. So now I want those kids dealing with those problems, dealing with pornography, dealing with whatever it is that cell phone is bringing them when they're with us, when they're around us. Ephraim, if you went to his class, that was right, exactly what he was talking about. So I never let my kids have cell phones in their rooms by themselves. Jackson didn't get a smartphone until he was, I think, 17. You know how hard it is to have a flip phone when you're going, you know, and the smartphones were around then. He's 27 now, but his brother had a smartphone, his older brother. I think his younger brother got a smartphone before Jackson did. That's not fair. Life isn't fair. You know what we said to him? That's sad. I understand. I know you're frustrated. I validated, and he had to work his butt off to get a smartphone. And then when he did, when all three of our boys got a smartphone, they were only able to use that with us, with other people. And again, that's a whole other class, how we set up those things. Again, if you've been in my other class, I apologize for the repetition on some of these things. This is the meat and potatoes of a program called Love and Logic, that you give them a task they can handle. And I want you to memorize these four steps. This is your mantra. This is what's going to get you to leave your old habits and what the world has taught you and do things differently to burn that new pathway. So the first one is give your child a task they can handle. That means make sure you break it down into chunks or steps that they can do. I always like to use the example, if you're going to get your child to clean their room, you know, it's like the dirty clothes and all the games and all the other stuff and the clean clothes that they never put away and now you can't tell if those are, and then all the toys and all the junk and making the bed and then they don't even talk about the closet because that's a whole, you're not going to have them just, that's not a task that a kid can handle, especially a kid that has learning disabilities, you know, or a kid who's bipolar. To go and clean their whole room and I expect to have it done in an hour? No, I don't know if I could do that. Okay, I'm a guy. You ladies can probably do that and 10 other things in that same time, but you know, no, I have that little tiny pathway in my head that I can't do that. So make sure you break it down into chunks. Now, that seems pretty normal for kids with learning disabilities, but step two is pretty weird. Seems pretty demented. Okay? Hope and pray that they don't do it. Okay? What system talks about that? Why do you think we hope and pray that the child doesn't do what we ask them to do? That could be homework, a chore, whatever. Why don't you want them Now, you don't tell them that. You know, I don't let my kids see that, that's what I'm hoping for. But I said something about experiences that will answer that question. Any thoughts? Why don't I want, if I break that down, first of all, and I say, just pick up your dirty clothes. And there's the hamper, just shoot baskets with your dirty clothes. There's your underwear, go wash your hands after you shoot that one, okay? And just put all the dirty clothes in the basket. Well, what about that? Don't worry about that. Don't worry about putting your clean clothes away. Don't worry about the closet right now. You're just picking up dirty clothes. And that's a task they can handle. And I give them, you know, it's like, how long do you think you can take you to get that done? Well, you have that done in 10 minutes. Great. So I leave, and then when I come back, when I leave and for that 10 minutes, what am I hoping for? That he doesn't do it. That he's left the building. Maybe he's left my home. Maybe he's getting other stuff out. Maybe he's made more of a mess. Because I want him to have lots of what?
Experiences.
This is a great time to have that. Okay? You know, it's kind of the same thing. Do you want him to, you know, my wife, I remember when Jackson had like $80, and he was like 8, and it was $80 from birthday money from grandma and grandpa and other money he had earned from mowing the neighbor's lawn. Not my lawn. He mowed my lawn, but for free. But mowing the neighbor's lawns and things like that. And he had $80, and my wife, and he wrapped it up with rubber bands, and we went, and I was coaching his older brother's basketball game, and my wife was just livid because she wasn't doing this. And she goes, he's going to lose that, Steve. I go,
okay.
I know.
Okay.
Isn't that cool? But it's $80. He's 8 years old. It's $80. And I go, yeah, it's better than $30,000, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know? Now, Jackson did dabble in, and I was hoping to pray him then, a couple years ago in stocks. And he lost, I think, $8,000. But he handled that. He dealt with that. I was glad that he did that. Because now he's making more money than I do. Not just in stocks, but in other things. He learned, struggled through that. It's a hard lesson. But I'd rather him lose $80 than $30,000, $100,000. Screw things up. Hurt the company. You know, can you imagine the electrical company that he's working for if he put them out of business? The other reason we hope and pray they blow it is it puts us in the right mindset. Okay, because if we just hope and pray they get it done and we come back and it's not done, what do? Gosh dang it. You know, how many times do I have to do? I'll just do it myself. And then we lose that relationship with them. And relationships are the most important thing on the planet. I always like to tell people, can you tell me something more important than relationships? I'll give you $100 if you can. You can't, I don't have $100. Okay? There's nothing. Some people say, God's more important. Well, that's a relationship. That's a relationship. So don't argue with them. Don't blow that. Step 3, let equal parts of empathy first, then consequences do the teaching. And we'll talk about empathy in a second. Step 4 is wash, rinse, and repeat. Okay? Does that make sense, guys? I know that I usually spend a long time on that, but I hope I'm not talking so fast and I'm going over this that it's just blowing your mind. Read a Love and Logic book. There's a good one, Love and Logic Solutions with Kids with Special Needs. I don't have my original Love and Logic book. It was loaned out and somebody never returned it. I've read it so many times I don't need it, but there's Parenting Teens with Love and Logic. Early Childhood, this is one of the best books for early childhood. It's a Love and Logic magic for early childhood. But you can come up and look at those later. So anyway, a lot of parents, especially in Southeast Idaho, more than anywhere in the world, and this is a compliment, by the way, not this, but the reasons why, they enable their kids. They either do this stuff for them. You know, you think about public school, and maybe it happens homeschooling too, but, you know, all those volcanoes during the science fair projects. Have you ever been to a public school science fair project stuff night? All those were done by parents. You know? And I remember my wife running to Walmart at 10 o'clock at night to do my son's projects. And I'm going, why are you doing that? You know, well, I guess he'll have that problem again. And she had a hard time with that hope and pray that they fail. I wanted him to get an F on it because he waited too long to do it. And it happened. It happened, thank goodness. But the reason I'm complimenting us is because nowhere on the planet other than Southeast Idaho, do people love their kids more? And that's a good thing. But it's bad if we're enabling them. It's hard to watch them suffer. It's hard to watch that. And so, but I always like to say, don't take the weights off their barbell. I have so many kids that because they come from enabling parents in my classroom, they enable the other students. And they go, why, Mr. Dewey? Why can't I tell them the answer? And I go, well, I know the answer. Why didn't I tell them? Can you imagine going into a weight room and somebody who's really struggling to lift that up, what are they trying to lift that for? To grow, to gain muscle, to get better. And I go, could you imagine if you took the weights off the end of their barbell? What the crap are you doing? Okay. So we want those kids to struggle through that. A lot of kids have this, especially kids with learning disabilities, have this, it's called the no-nonsense and both of us worrying about it syndrome. If my parents and kids will condition and control their parents to do it, like my wife, to do everything for them, to solve everything for them, and if I have enough people to do that, then I don't have to be. It only takes one person to worry about it. If I get grandma, oh my gosh, grandma, she's going to worry about it. Oh my goodness. So we got to start training our brain to let them screw up. And we're going to wrap that love around it and help them out. So start looking for ways to help them help themselves. Read that. Finding ways to help them help themselves. You've heard of helicopter parents, drill sergeant parents, okay, total opposite, but they still teach the same thing. You're too fragile, you're too stupid to make it in life without me. We want to be consultant parents, like a job coach. We want to consult with them, help them. But in the end, they need to know when you make your life miserable, you make your life miserable. Not mom's, not mine. You know, we love you no matter what you do. So your job as parents is not to find a cure for their disabilities. Okay? Not to find a cure. You're going to think I'm really weird, but you know the little puzzle piece, the cure for autism, stuff like that? I was thinking, well, that's good if they're raising money to develop that, but does anybody really know why people are wearing those puzzle pieces? How about we just deal with, and maybe that's a bad example, but we need to give them those social and emotional tools to help them through those challenges. And the way you respond to those challenges won't solve their problems with their learning disability, but it'll give them hope and confidence that they can improve and that they'll eventually succeed. Let's talk about self-efficacy. Anybody know what self-efficacy is? It's kind of a fun word, self-efficacy. Let me give you my definition. My definition is the belief, the understanding, the knowledge that you can get whatever you want. When I teach this to my students, they get excited. Because I really play it up. I go, I'm like your fairy godfather. I can help you to get you whatever you want. You want a brand new Chevy Silverado? Do you want a Porsche? Do you want a girlfriend? Do you want, you know? And they're like, yeah, Mr., are you serious? And I can. I promise you, I'm not lying. I can get you whatever you want. But guess where I lose them? I go, you can get whatever you want. It's a great American dream, but you have to know how to work. And they, oh, well, screw that. Because this generation doesn't want to work. They want it just gifted to them. Okay? So what are the three reasons for this to happen? You work hard, you kept trying, and you kept practicing. Would you like to have your children have a high sense of self-efficacy? I would. I don't know, you no kids or whatever. So let me tell you what kids with low self-efficacy say. They come out of taking a test or whatever, and they go, "You got an A, lucky. That's your truck. Oh, you're so lucky." No, there is no such thing as luck. Maybe in Vegas or other gambling places, but life is too precious to rely on luck. No. No, I have that because I work my butt off for it. Okay? I'm a school teacher. Don't make very much. So I work my butt off. I mow lawns in the summertime. I do landscaping. I teach parenting classes. I do, so many other things. And so I do have nice things. Okay, but nobody gave those to me. I'm not bragging when I tell that to the kids. I'm just showing them that they can do the same thing. So, to raise your child's
understanding and to have a high sense of self-efficacy, this is what I would suggest you do. You notice them. And I wish I could tell you all the success stories of how I've done this in schools with kids I don't even know. Okay? Teachers have asked me, you know, how can we help this kid? He's not even my kid. And I said, well, if you'll notice him, I'll notice him. I won't even introduce myself. I'll just notice this kid I don't even know. Let's get the counselor to notice him. Let's get, you know, two or three other adults. What if we had like four adults notice this kid? Really? That fast? Holy cow. I really only have 10 minutes left?
30. Sorry.
Oh, 30.
I was trying to point to the small one.
I saw the 10. I almost passed out.
I apologize.
Okay.
I didn't have a small
one. No, you're good. Thank you. So notice anything that's at least neutral or something good. How many times do we notice the bad things that people do?
It's
so easy, right? So we notice something. So this kid that I've done this, you know, school that I, or kids that I don't even know, I go, I noticed that you wore a lot of black today. And, you know, about kids that like to have behavior issues that, or special needs kids, they wear the goth stuff. Okay? I noticed that you rode your skateboard. I noticed that you talk a lot with Mike and Jeff. I noticed that you have Mr. Smith's class. I noticed that you got to school 15 minutes early. And as I do this, I do a flyby. I noticed that you're wearing your green lanyard today. Okay? I noticed that you got a cool American baseball hat on with a flag on there. I noticed that's got just all white. And I just notice as I'm walking by. How much effort does that take? So that's pretty cool. That happens pretty fast. Next step. You kind of do what I call a Columbo, if you're old enough to know about Columbo. So I noticed that you've got a multicolored jacket on. Okay? And as I'm walking by, if you want, you can do step two. Okay? I did this with this kid for like a month, 3 weeks or so for a month. I didn't do step two yet. And then after about 3 or 4 weeks, I started coming back and I go, you know, like in this case, I noticed something good. I noticed that you got to school early, right? I noticed that you are that you picked up your wrapper when you dropped it on the ground. And I back up and I go, how did you do that? How did you, you know? And I just play dumb. That's easy for me. and then they go, I don't know. And I go, well, usually when good things happen, it's because you either worked hard, or you kept trying, or you kept practicing. Those are the three reasons why good things happen. Which one did you do? Oops. Why isn't that working? So, and they tell me, well, I worked hard. And then don't be a cheerleader. Okay? Use encouragement instead of praise. We see so many programs. Praise your kids. Praise your kids. Praise is phony. I'm going to diss on the praise thing. Praise is about us. Oh, I'm so proud of you. I can't believe you did that. That's so cool. You know, we'd be a cheerleader. Oh, I'm so proud of you. That's so good. A really low self-efficacy kid is going to say, well, I'm glad you like that. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It's stupid. Okay? But if we just say, how does that feel? How did you do that? So what we're trying to do is to connect the dots, to help them to understand that when I work my butt off, I get the things that I want. And it has nothing to do with me or your mom or anybody else. It's you. You're in control. And kids love to be in control. And if you've got a strong special need kids, they feel out of control. Because life sucks. Life is hard and it strips control. This is a great way to give them control over their life. Does that make sense? So I encourage them by saying, I noticed that. How does that feel? But I'm definitely not going to be a cheerleader. I have to bite my tongue. I was first started doing this. I had a bloody tongue because I wanted to say, oh, that's so cool. I'm so proud of you, but I had to hold on to that. Okay? If you've got a child that has high self-efficacy, you know, I have a nephew that kid, he goes, if I could get any greater, I'd rub cheese all over myself. I think that's how his joke is. But he feels good about himself. Not in an arrogant way. Yeah, thank you. But he has that good feeling about himself. And I could tell him, Chase, I'm so proud of you. And oh, thanks, Uncle Steve. But he doesn't rely on that. Okay? He can't borrow that from somebody. So focus on their strengths. Okay? Is another thing. When we first started working with Jackson, even when he was a little boy, my wife and I weren't good at this. And we would say to our friends, our neighbors, my parents, my wife's parents, you know, grandma and grandpa, we would do it. And we didn't even realize that Jackson was listening. He was in the room. And we would complain about Jackson. And we would talk about the terrible things that he did. And would whine and whine. And he's like, why do my kids whine? I don't know. What do you think? Because we're whining about him. Okay. And we did that. And we watched his self-esteem go down the toilet. And then we started focusing on his strengths. Can't tell you how many IEP meetings I've sat in. And the first thing we do is we ask parents, tell me about your son's strengths. I've seen so many parents that, I don't know. And I have to kick him under the table. Come on, the kid's sitting right there. What are his strengths? Okay. Jackson, oh my gosh, he tunes into others' emotions and what they need better than I do. And I teach this stuff. He knows. I always say that the umbilical cord between Jackson and my wife has not been cut yet. Or at least they have a wireless service. Because he knows, he will call my wife, I swear, he will call my wife up when she's hurting, and he will build her up, and she'll start crying, you know, those tears of how he cares about her and how he respects her. He's not a mama's boy, but he's just tuned into her. He can do that with you. He can do that with you. He could do that with anybody on the street. He feels that. That's a strength, a great strength. Okay? She does great in math calculations. These are just examples. He has a high capacity for creative problem solving. Another great strength that Jackson has. She has increased peripheral perception. She's knowing what's going on. She knows who's in the room. She knows what's going on. She can hear that. She can see this. And she notices those things. Could you imagine how good that would be in the real world? I could give a crap if my son, you know, if my kids get out of school and they're going into the world, if they have some change in their pocket and a high sense of self-esteem, I could care less how much math they know necessarily. I mean, I want them to be good with good skills like that, but when it comes down to what the world needs, I want these kinds of things. You know, Jackson, he can fix anything. You know, she works well with her hands, those kinds of things. Questions on that? What things can we do to help our kids? Read out loud to them. Allow them to try science experiments. These are just things that a lot of special ed teachers will suggest. Rewards related to their success. With Jackson, I remember when he finally completed his first book. It was Ronald Dowell, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That was his first book, guys. Kind of sad. But we had read a lot to him, but he finished that. And he got a good grade on his report on that book. We had promised him something. We will do something. He didn't know. And we got the chocolate fountain. I think that's when we bought it. Mm-hmm. We bought that chocolate fountain and we invited five of his best friends and we had a chocolate fondue party. And, you know, just things like that. Go on field trips. Those are priceless. Use word associations to help them memorize those little mnemonic devices. Okay. Like if my wife sends me to the store to pick up five things, I don't need to write them down. I don't tell her to text me what she needs. If it's milk, eggs, dryer sheets, you know, let's just go with those for a sake of time. I got the dryer sheets in my head stuck in the handle of the milk, okay, and sitting on a carton of eggs. So I'm touching those things. Just teaching them little things like that to help them to remember those kinds of things. Jackson, he could remember when we went on vacations, he could remember the hotel room numbers, every hotel we ever stayed in. He was able to remember those numbers, so he's good with math, things like that. Books on tape, studying with other kids, using drawings and illustrations, especially color. Okay. This one's huge. Think life success rather than school success. I always believe that kindergarten should be about learning how to have fun in school, you know, staying within the lines, how to color, how to follow directions. But, and then first grade through fifth or sixth grade needs to be about school. Get those reading abilities up, math abilities up, all the, you know, the three R's. Teach those things. Then by middle school, my middle school kids know you are not in school to learn math. If you learn more math, that's great. That's just icing on the cake. If you learn how to read better, learn how to write better, that's just nice. You learn some science stuff, yeah, that's nice.
But that's, nobody's going to tell you this, kids, but that's not the reason you're in middle school. You're in middle school to learn how to do hard things. And when my kids, when my students say, I don't want to go to history, that sucks, it's so boring. And I go, oh, good, good. Learn, go to history and learn how to be bored. I want you to get really, really good at being bored. Learn how to do that. Be mindful of, hey, this is boring. Okay? And then learn how to sit there, learn how to get through it. Get really good at that, because I promise you, you're going to have a job, whether you're an electrician or a plumber or a scientist or whatever. You're going to go to meetings, even as an electrician, and it's going to be boring as hell. And that you need to learn how to deal with that. If you want to keep your job, sometimes your marriage is going to be boring as hell. Okay? Because your wife is going to just unload all of everything that happened today, and you've got to sit there and listen. It might be boring to you. Okay? But you've got to learn how to do that. Can you, you know, how they going to learn how to buy a home? How to finance a home? Okay, how to support and understand their spouse. These are all the, I mean, that's just a handful of things that I want my kids to know how to do. More than math, more than reading, okay? With technology today, a lot of those things can be done that way anyway. But don't get me wrong, elementary is to learn those skills. Did you know that when, I don't know if you know this, probably preaching to the choir, when in regular school, public school, when a kid gets into high school, they no longer have goals that are academic on their IEP. We're not required by the state, and it really makes no sense to have academic goals. We just have transition goals. Transition goals is all there is. And then the accommodations are all set up to help them to support those transition goals. How are you going to transition out of high school, out of your childlike life, into the real world? How are you going to get there? Okay. They did a 20-year study of kids that have severe learning disabilities, other disabilities, but I think they focused on learning disabilities. What was the biggest reason for success? And I was eating lunch and I was looking over my notes. I did a typo here, but we'll come back to that one. Self-awareness, self-confidence. I wrote down some notes because I knew I'd be in a hurry. So give them the knowledge about their strengths and then their weaknesses. What I did with Jackson is I attached him to my tool belt. I had that kid with me when I was fixing the toilet, building a fence. He was my buddy on doing home repairs, solving problems, talking to how I screwed up with your mom. Your mom's mad at me. You know, what do you think I could do? How could I, you know, and that's one of the reasons he knows how to read my wife. Kid knows how to read other people's because I told him my problems. Help me to solve those. These are real world problems. Okay? Being proactive. Teach that self-advocacy. How to advocate for yourself. How to make choices, how to make decisions, preventing problems. And the only way to teach them that being proactive is to let them screw up. And you're just there to help pick up the pieces, give them hugs, wipe away the tears, guide them on how to get through it. What are some options that you can do to fix it? How to persevere, endure to the end. No, don't give up. One of the ways I taught that is going fishing. Jackson and I have a huge disability. It's called LCS. You know what that is? Last cast syndrome. So it's like one more cast, I promise, last cast. And then we don't get it. We have never gotten skunked. You know what that means, ladies? Mm-hmm. We've always got fish. We've never come home without fish. Or without at least, you know, we do catch and release. But it's just like one more cast. And we will not give up. And so we will move to a different place. We'll try 500 different lures or 500 different flies, but we've always caught fish. I know that's silly, but, you know, it's just that perseverance. And show that you don't give up. Ability to set goals. Knowing how to ask for help. This one is the ability to handle stress. So change that on your notes. The ability to handle stress. And again, how you role play it. Playing sports. I remember when I was at Primary Children's. How much time do I have? 15? Thank you. The head boss when I was at Primary Children's Dr. Richard Ferry, head of psychiatry. He gave me some of the best advice with Jackson. He said, go get all the pillows from all your rooms, your guest rooms, pull the pillows off the couches, the love seat, and we would create this. We invented the first bounce house. You know, like the eye jumps or the places where you land in all the foam? We should have invented that because that's what we created in our living room for Jackson when he was 5, when he was 8. We would just push him and he'd come up and, you know, and we were all laughing and he would just fall back and he was just sweating just to get all that hyperactivity out of him, learn. And we taught him how to do that in the appropriate ways. Questions on that? I know I'm just giving you tons of stuff and hopefully it's helpful. But what do we know that comes with disabilities?
Behaviors.
Okay, and that makes sense because, again, those disabilities rob us of our control. When we don't have control, sometimes we act out. One of the best things I learned at primaries, too, is all behavior is a form of communication. And one of our jobs that we can do with our kids when they start acting out with behaviors is read it. I want you to be a translator. Your job is to translate what that behavior means back to them. Because they don't even know. And you moms, I want you to trust your gut. Dad, same thing. Trust that what's in your gut. But you got to be empathetic. You can't worry about what they just said to you, what they just did to try and tick you off. Don't let that enter in. Be empathetic for them. Think about what they're going through. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But this is kind of interesting. Most kids will save their worst behaviors for the person they feel safest around or the ones they can control. Which one are you? Jackson would save his worst behavior for me because he knew that I was safe to be around and I wouldn't shame him and help him out with that. Don't focus on the behavior. Okay? People ask me, how do you not get mad? That kid just said some filthy stuff to you. That kid just took a swing at you. That kid just spit on you. I've had so many kids spit at me. I've had my nose broken twice in all my 35 years that I've done this. How do you not get mad? I remember I had to restrain an adult special needs kid at the Idaho State Fair in Blackfoot. My family's all sitting there getting Reed's Dairy ice cream. We're standing in a line and this guy comes up and I didn't know where his parent or CBRS worker was or whatever. And he'd lost him, and he butted in the front of this line, and this lady was chewing him out, and she wasn't mindful about how he was going to claim her clock. And I had to help him move away, and I got him off. And the end result is I finally had to restrain him. Everything I did wasn't working. I had to restrain him, and these people are asking my wife, does your husband need help? He does that all the time. And that, you know, restraint's my last thing, but I want you to... How do I do this? Because I visualize when I'm laying in bed, when I'm shoveling snow, when I'm doing anything downtime. I mean, I can drive on the road in 6 lanes of traffic in Utah and eat a cheeseburger in one hand and text in the other. I know that's not right, but that doesn't bother me because I drove in Utah for a while. So when I'm driving, I can visualize some of the nastiest, worst behaviors in the world. And I don't change what they do, I only change what I do. I see what I could do. What does my face look like? What does my tone of voice sound like? So when I'm shoveling snow, I'm visualizing. I call it practicing. And I keep doing that until I see the right outcome. And then I just put it on a loop. And I see myself doing that over and over. So that not if, but when it happens... People say, how did you know how to do that? How did you come up with that answer that fast? How did you do that? I've seen it happen. Like I said in the other class, I've seen somebody hold a gun to my head in my classroom thousands of times. Really? Well, not actually, but in my head. And I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I'm more ready for that to happen. I don't hope it does, heavens no. But I'll be ready for that to happen. And other teachers are freaking out. So that's what this one's saying. You know, I didn't show it on the next slide, so sorry. Listen to your kids. Be a good content listener. I'll let you just kind of look at that. This is kind of what I talked about in the other class. When kids like to argue with you, a lot of times they'll be looking straight at you, and they want to manipulate you. They want to... how much time do I have?
You have 10.
10 minutes, thanks.
11, yeah.
11 minutes. So don't argue with a kid who is trying to win a battle with you. Did you know that a teenager's brain especially is wired to win arguments? You will not win. You'll go down in flames. It's not worth it. I always tell people never, ever, ever answer the but why questions. It's like, I need you to get your homework done. Or I need you to go help your brother. But why? Don't answer that. If God could come down from the heavens and answer your child's but why questions, would your child be satisfied? So what makes you think you have a better answer than God? Don't go there. Instead, I use a one-liner such as, you know, you might say, this is stupid. I know. But what did I say? Well, this is really dumb. I'll bet it feels that way. Well, it is. And what did I say? Notice how I pause between each one of those. Jim Fay, the author of Love and Logic, he would say this is one of the most powerful words to be able to circle back around and go right back to let him know there's so much knowledge behind that I'm not going to get involved in this, and I'm going to circle right back around with what I asked you. What was the thing that I asked you to do? I would ask you to memorize at least two, because don't try and have all of these in your head. No, just memorize two and make them yours. Visualize that. Get ready with that so that you can just regurgitate one of those answers. But the reason I say two is because, like, if your child says, well, you're stupid. I know. And what did I say? We don't want to go there, so we might want to go with nice try. And what did I say? Jim Fay was talking about this one lady who, she goes, Jim, do you want to see my new tattoo? And he goes, I don't know, where is it? Depends on where it is. She said she had the word N-I-C-E there on her first digit. And then try, T-R-Y, on the next digit. And then she had a smiley face like they see at Walmart. And when her kids started trying to argue with her, she'd just whip her finger out. Nice try. And that smile reminded her to smile. So you don't let them see you getting upset. Okay. So I love those one-liners. Practice those. Give choices. And I put some rules on giving choices there. One of the most proactive, easiest things you can do to see behavior changes tonight. I can't give you an easier intervention than giving choices about nothing. Do you want juice or milk? Do you want to brush your teeth first or get your pajamas on first? Do you want to go to
night.
What's that?
I use that every night.
Oh my goodness.
One of the two. Yeah. Same direction.
But you know, the science of control says we either give kids choices or give kids control on our terms, or they will take control on their terms, and then it gets ugly. So I'm going to give kids choices about anything. About, you know, things I could care less which one they pick. Okay? Problem solving steps. When they come to you with problems that they don't know how to solve, you know, I didn't know how to do this work. I don't know how to study for this test or whatever it is. I hurt this kid today. You know, I don't know what to do. And, oh my goodness, that's sad. So we're going to listen with empathy. That's really sad. What happened? Oh, I can understand. Yeah, no doubt. And then I ask, sweetie, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And, oh, I don't know. This is terrible. And they throw up all this stuff and get it out. Because, you know, you got to get rid of all of it so that you'll feel better, right? If we're talking about real vomit, sorry. But so I try and purge it out with those first two things. What are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? Well, I don't know. And then I ask the question, would you like to hear what some kids do? Don't tell them what you would like them to do, because they don't want to know what you would do. Okay? They're interested in what their peers would do. So do you want to know what some kids would do? Well, I don't know. Well, some kids would, and I would tell you to give them the worst thing that what some kids would do. Some kids would just smack him right back in the face. They'd just break his nose. I know that's terrible, right? I'm not telling him to do that, but am I telling them the truth?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not lying to that kid. Okay? And then I say, how would that work for you? And now I see a reversal here. Instead of him suggesting, I'm just going to hit him. No, you're not. You know what would happen? Now it's coming out of the right mouth. Dad, are you nuts? If I hit him, this would happen and I'd have to pay for this and I would get in trouble and da 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 da. Oh, okay. I just go flatline. And then I go back to this. I do about three or four of some choices and I gradually get to the best one. Okay? And that's the one that I want him to do, but he wouldn't know it by looking at my face. I have to have this don't care look on my face. And then I go, hey, step five is I give him permission to solve it or not solve it at all. I go, Jackson, I'm just kind of a curious dad. Will you let me know how that works out for you? and I walk away.
I walk away, and Jackson would love this. He even knew all five steps.
If I would get to, oh, Jackson, that's really sad. I can't believe that happened. He goes, just tell me what some kids would do, Dad. Or if he was manipulative, I'd say, Jackson, that's really sad. And he goes, yeah, and I don't want to know what other kids would do about it either. And he'd walk away, and he'd go solve it on his own, which is great. Because he would do it under our roof and help him with that. I know we're almost out of time. What, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys were mentioning, somebody was mentioning Dr. Foster Klein. He was one of the first authors that helped out with Love and Logic. And he came up with this. There was an amazing video. It's an old, old video. But it shows him sitting with a child. I want you to quickly think of, give me something that, especially you mom, something that you were so worried about your child dabbling with someday.
Porn.
Give me another one.
Drugs,
thank you. Pregnancy. What's that?
Well, yeah, pregnancy.
Pregnancy, yeah, getting pregnant, okay? Hurting somebody, wrecking the family car, those kinds of things. Anything that is in your stomach, a unit of concern is when you transfer, it's almost like a medical procedure, you're transferring that from your stomach into your child's. And the steps to do that are some things that I would do is only talk about one concern at a time. You're never going to go to your child and talk about all of those things that you're worried about. That's just, they flip the mute button. And they just, all they hear from you is wah, 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 like Charlie Brown. So I would start at an earlier age than you think. Okay? What do you think you need to talk to sex about your kids, with your kids? What age?
18.
That's way too old. It's already been done by their friends. With my boys, I started when they were 7, 8 years of age. Probably nowadays even younger. Because I'd rather them hear it from me than their buddies or on the internet. So I do it about a 5 minute talk here, 5 minute talk there, 5 minutes. And so if I need to divide it up, that's good. But I just, in my talk, I got to make sure my face and my tone of voice lets them know that it is not to be my problem anymore as soon as we're done talking. How are you going to handle this? What are you going to do? I use some of those problem-solving steps. Okay? And I practice with my wife or somebody else before I talk. And then, you know, if I have to schedule another time for part two of that or bring it up another year, but I let him know. You know, so with Jackson, he knew that if he got somebody pregnant, I would say, how much would your mom and I spend, or the time, could you come back home and live with us or whatever? No. And before you could even get that out, I think, you know, like, or like if you did drugs and you were soused out on drugs, how much money would I spend to get you out of the gutter, so to speak? And before they even answer, I say, not a penny. So I rip that safety net out from under them before, because that's what the United States government does, is it puts all of these safety nets, and people know that they can keep screwing up and keep doing, and we'll save them. So if they know from the get-go that I will love them, I will support them. If you got a girl pregnant, your mom and I would cut coupons for diapers, and we would babysit your kid so you and your wife could go walk around the Greenbelt, because that's all you'll be able to afford. But you're not going to live with us. We'll support you the best we can, but you'll be on your own. We told him that when he was in like fourth grade, and then again in fifth grade. And I remember he came home from middle school one day, and he was telling me about how this girl held his hand. And he says, I was about 10 or about 30 seconds into holding her hand. I was really happy. She was really a cute girl. And then I remembered, it came back to me, and I let go of her hand. I said, Jackson, that's... He goes, yeah, I know, Dad, but one thing leads to another. You know, and he was so, so worried about that. Last thing I'll say real quickly is, you know, get kids to do chores. There's some of the rules on chores. I never pay kids to do chores. Chores are probably, I've read so many journals and so many conferences that they say that is the biggest predictor of success in kids, by the amount of chores we get them to do. And yet when they surveyed, only 26% of families are having kids do chores on a weekly or nightly basis. We're in a world of trouble. And we wonder why our world's going the way it is. Why this generation is lazy. They give up. They don't persevere. Because we don't give, and you don't have to live on a farm, okay? It doesn't matter, but you teach them how to get through hard things. Is there a correlation between kids doing hard things at home and persevering through it and doing hard things at school? Absolutely. Okay. The Anita Archer method, and I typed that wrong, so cross that out. I apologize. Is I do it, we do it, we do it, we do it for like a couple of years, and then you do it. So I model how I clean this bathroom, and I make it like Tom Sawyer whitewashing the fence. They're begging me to wash that toilet or to use the pumice stains. Like, oh, Dad, can I? Nope, this is mine. I got to do this. This is so cool. And I'm having a ball. And then we clean the bathrooms together. We're in there passing gas and laughing and burping, having a burping contest because we're men. We're guys, and we're just in there. And my wife walks by and goes, oh, my gosh. And I go, hey, did you want to do this? You know, and we're just in there having a ball cleaning the bathroom for a couple of years. And then we graduate to they do it. And because do you want your kid to do a chore and go, you know, I did want to clean that bathroom, but I got $10. Or would you rather have them do this? I didn't want to clean that bathroom, but I'm really needed in this family. This family needs me. And we do things for each other because we love each other and we need each other. We're a family unit. Kids that don't have that in some of the big cities go out and join another family called gangs. And are the chores in gangs a lot harder and more severe than in a family? Okay. Defiance. I will say this. Don't. Are we out of time?
No.
Sorry. I will say this. Take care of yourself in front of a defiant kid that I'll take care of it. Try not to worry about it. Walk away. Let them think they got away with it. And then go do something fun. Take care of yourself and the other kids in the family and go do something fun. Something that you can afford. You can go skiing together, and then they help you to figure out who's going to watch them while you're going skiing. And how are they going to pay for that babysitter while you're going skiing? And then when they're being really good kid for the next week or 2 weeks, you go again. And do you take them this time? No. Because we hit defiance really hard because that's a dangerous thing. And the kid comes up to you and is like, but I've been good all week or I've been good for the last 2 weeks. You know what, kiddo, I appreciate that. I appreciate your effort. But when I ask you to do something, I expect you to do it. And I'm still not quite sure that I can trust you that you're going to do that. So maybe next time. So now the kid does it because he knows that I'm in charge now. And I need to be in charge of that one. And he needs to know that he needs to do it for the right reasons, not just being good to get. Okay. Post high school help, tap into vocational rehab or voc rehab. I talked to a lady the other day. It's any student that's 14 to 21 that has a diagnosed disability. Jackson, I tapped into that with him. He had a 504 plan, but you know, we had a diagnosis outside, and we could have used that as well, but we used the 504 plan. Fill out that application. Jackson was able to get, I think, $1,000 worth of tools to be an electrician, and they lined him up to be with a journeyman electrician, and he fell in love with it from that point. He is a manager now at an electrician company or electrical company. But they have a thing I just heard about the other day. They're going to be at Bonneville High School. They do this thing called Reality Town from 8th through 10th graders where they simulate real-world experiences. I think they even have school resource officers there pulling them over to give them a ticket as they go on to their job. There, they just create a real situation there where they have to, it's kind of like the game of life. They have to buy a home and they have to, you know, get married. How are you going to handle this now? And they spend the whole morning dealing with those kinds of things. So tap into that. Guys, I wish I had time for questions. Any real quick questions before we let you go?
Who does the reality?
Oh, Voc Rehab does the reality. Yeah. Yep. So get online, get with Voc Rehab, start earlier than later, you know, so that you know when you need to get things in place.
So working, in your experience working with children who have disabilities or your own child, do you feel that they tend to I know that a lot will probably, you know, like they'll embrace it and they'll be able to utilize it for, you know, benefit around them and everything, but do you feel like they tend to grow out of their disabilities?
Yes, I will say they don't even really recognize it that much anymore.
I mean, Jackson will joke about the, you know, I was so stupid in high school, or I was, you know, and he's just kidding. But I tell him to be careful with that. But he is so, he has such high confidence in himself, he totally forgets about, you know, what that was like, and because he knows what he's doing. He's, you know, he has his own home now, and, you know, and he's just amazing. That kid is so resilient. And by the way, I will end with this one too. He has told me, I am so grateful for my learning disability, for being bipolar. It has helped me to become the man I am today. And he has thanked me at when we invite him over, he and his wife over for Sunday dinner. He has told me so many times, I am so grateful, Dad, that you left me to go to the, you know, he says there's about five things that are at the top of the of my head that of what you guys did, and I'm so thankful that you did that. We took him to a Boise State football game. That was his favorite team. Long story short, we'd spent the money to go down there, had great seats, blew some good money on that, and he was being such a pain in the butt that I had given him an enforceable statement. When I go to Boise State football games, it has to be with people I enjoy being around. You know, they have to make it fun for me. And he wasn't making it fun for me earlier in the day, and I told him that, and I was hoping and praying he'd screw up, and my wife says, are you nuts? You know, we spent all this time, 4.5-hour drive or whatever, to get to Boise and do all this, and you're going to leave him? And I go, I'm not leaving him. He's choosing to leave. And as I backed away from that hotel room, he was standing there like this, going, you're not going to do this. That was the hardest thing. I had to just gun it with my other two sons and get there. And then the 4.5-hour ride home the next day, it sucked. But he and I are planning to go and have front row seats to the next Boise State game, especially if they make it to the playoffs next year. So anyway, but he's been so busy that I'm going, let's go this year. It's like, oh, I wish I could, Dad, but kind of like cats in the cradle, you know. He knows how Dad's busy, and he's busy. But anyway, guys, thank you for your time. I wish you the best. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Oh, you betcha. I'll let you turn that on. Thank you. I'm sorry I went over.